You're listening to The Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
Hello, Gamecock Nation, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 84. TRC stands for The Rubber Chickens, and you can find our writings at therubberchickensblog.com. You can find us on social media outlets such as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And we are brought to you tonight by BlueMoonDisc.com, makers of the authentic Discada plow disc cooking pans, the ultimate tailgate cooking accessory. If you visit BlueMoonDisc.com and use the promo code TRC2015 at checkout, you can receive 10% off your entire offer. But hurry, you only have 3 weeks left in this football season. I'm joined tonight, as always, by T-Bone and the G-Man, two guys who have lived lives equivalent to fumbling inside the 15-yard line with less than a half minute to go and down by 3 points.
Oh, geez, until you just said that, I did not realize how it was the perfect analogy for my existence.
You get so close to the goal, and you fumble every time. So what's going on, G? You're just kind of quiet over there. Technical difficulties?
I finally got my technical difficulties worked out. Took me a couple minutes, but I am ready to go. Nothing really earth-shattering to report in my world.
So let me tell you, my nephews were here. My nephews were here this weekend, and they said they saw a picture of you, which I think was the first time they'd ever seen you before, or at least that they could remember since they were like 5 or 6 years old.
They're and like, their nephews
ran.
Yeah, they're like, man.
Wait a minute.
His voice does not match the way he looks. They said, I expected like some 6'5", 300-pound guy.
I've hung out with your nephews. I'm offended. I went to the Georgia.
Oh, maybe they didn't say it was like the first time they'd seen you. Maybe they just said when they listened to you on the podcast that your voice doesn't match your body. Maybe that was it. Yeah, that's right. We went to the Peach Bowl with them. Didn't they? That's right. They went with us to the Peach Bowl. That's right. Right. The Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. So
are you saying that there's something lacking in my physical makeup?
Is that I wasn't saying that. I was saying you have a very manly voice, which doesn't go. Yeah, I guess I am saying. I guess I am saying it really doesn't go along with your body type.
Too bad the audience can't see the guns right now that I'm displaying on screen.
Yeah. Oh man. So we have not had a podcast in almost a month. We podcast right after Steve Spurrier's resignation. We've had the Vanderbilt game, an off week, Texas A&M, and now the Tennessee game. So it's been a while since we've chatted, and a lot has happened. I'll tell you, this season for me, and tell me if you kind of feel this way, it's kind of turned into a dream sequence. It's like everything's kind of like in, this foggy lighting on every Saturday, and I'm not nervous before the games, and I don't get particularly upset when we don't do well. And meanwhile, I mean, it's been rainy, and every weekend I feel like it's been raining and nasty and just, you know, and Clemson is ranked number one in the country, and what a weird season.
I'm right there with you, man. When I watch our games now, it's like I'm watching some game from the WAC or something, or Maction, one of those games. You know, it's like Central Michigan versus Purdue.
Except you know, Pam Ward's not doing the
right,
play-by-play.
Yeah, well, no Pam Ward, but I mean, if she was on there, it would be fitting.
Beth Mowins. Beth Mowins and Pam Ward sound exactly the same.
Right, but I mean, you turn the game on and you kind of like, oh, our game's on. Oh, ho-hum. I mean, and in the last few years, you know, your stomach's churning. You're wondering about all kind of stuff and the game's on. You might walk out, you know, grab a beer, go get something to eat, go to the bathroom, come back, three or four plays have gone by. You don't even care what you missed.
Right, you know? You don't even rewind it. It's like, oh, looks like we picked up a first down. I don't care how we picked it up.
You don't care. You just, oh, you got a first down. Or they got like a 30-yard play, and you're kind of like, oh, you know, I expected that to happen. Now, it's such a departure from the last few years of football watching.
Yeah.
It's somewhat refreshing in a way, but depressing at the same time.
T-Bone?
Well, you know, it's in my younger days, I was known from time to time to perhaps have one too many adult beverages. And the feeling that I have this year is the feeling that you have when you've been at the party.
Right.
like last week. Tuesday. I was younger last Tuesday. But you're at the party and you know you need to go and you have that one more drink and you've actually turned, the party's turned on you and all the jokes seem bad and all the people are annoying and you know, you're sick of G-Man's house. But yeah, in that moment in the party, when you're just like, I want it over and I'm actually going to drink myself into oblivion, that's where this season is for me. It does feel kind of fuzzy around the edges because, you know, it's not the end of the world. We're not talking about matters of great cosmic importance, but, you know, I'm dying over here. Okay. I can't take much more of this. And I've kind of
you just wanted to be over.
I'm one step away from the Helsinki syndrome when I'm going to start identifying with these stupid orange clad inbreds. I mean, I'm this close to just giving up and pulling for Clemson.
The Helsinki syndrome. I thought that was called the what else? What else is it called? That's what's her name. Who was the woman who was held captive and
Hattie Hurst.
Is that the Helsinki syndrome? That doesn't sound right.
It's either that or something else.
don't make me say it, guys.
I'm gonna be looking at Helsinki syndrome. That can't be right.
I think it's called that. I'll Google it. Y'all talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah. All right. So the Tennessee game. Well, let's go back to. You know, we get a win over Vanderbilt. It, what was the final of that? 19-10?
19-10, like yeah.
Then we get a week off. Everybody's kind of happy to get past Vanderbilt, maybe feel like we're not the worst team in the SEC. And then we go to Texas A&M and surprisingly hang in there with them until the end of the game, lose by a touchdown. And honestly, I said this last week before the game, I thought Tennessee was going to beat us by three touchdowns. I thought the way their offense was constructed and the way we just can't put up a lot of points, I expected a, you know, 42-20, 42-17 type of a game, and it very much started out that way. I mean, it was 14-0 after Tennessee had run 9 plays, I think, it took them to score their first 2 touchdowns. And we were in bad shape. We were hammering on the defense, but then somehow what happened where the defense clamped down and, you know, they still gave up some yards and some points, but what were they doing differently? Did you guys notice anything except for just playing better?
Seems like we put a little more pressure on them. We tried, but you know, we still gave up a whole lot of third and longs throughout the second half, but we seemed like we blitzed a little bit more than we did in the A&M game. A&M game, you notice we just ran that vanilla defense the entire ball game, never did anything else, and just sat back and said, okay, we're going to let you gain 8 yards a play, but we're not going to let you gain, you know, 80 yards on a play. You know, it's right. Basically what we did in the A&M game. We brought some more pressure against Tennessee, and that seemed to help. We shut down the run. Really did.
Right.
I don't know how.
Yeah. So for once.
The other thing, though, to not, I don't want to put too rosy of a picture on it, but the other thing is Tennessee kept us in the ball game. I mean, they had a particularly bad a fumble down near the goal, you know, near their own goal that gave us a quick score.
Their third series of the game, yeah. Dobbs fumbled, I think, like on second down. Yeah. So
they were on the cusp of the blowout, and then it fell apart. And, yeah, as it turns out, there's the Helsinki syndrome, and there's also the Stockholm syndrome,
yeah. So what's the difference between the Stockholm syndrome and the Helsinki syndrome? When you identify with your captors, that's Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. One's in Sweden and the other's
in Denmark. But do they do the same thing?
But it's the same, basically.
Do you have to be in those countries to have these feelings overtaken?
One of them, you're vaguely affiliated with NATO, and the other one, you're very close to being a Warsaw Pact.
So anyway... So we're down 17-3. We make a comeback and led mostly by Perry Orth, our walk-on quarterback. I was very impressed with, Perry Orth, he just doesn't go out there and complete 70% of his passes and throw for 300 yards. But somehow when we need it, he finds a way to get us down the field. And G-Man texted us the other day. He said, man, the guy's just got guts. I mean, he's a gamer. You hate to use these cliches, but I mean, that's what he is. He's a football player. He's a guy who doesn't have a tremendous amount of talent. And
we're not losing these games because of Perry Orth. Right. I can tell you that. Now, he did throw the pick six in the A&M game, and that was pretty ugly. But you kind of got to give him credit. We've been running that slant pattern pretty successfully for a while, and they picked that thing. But Perry Orth is not why we're losing the ball games. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why we're losing the ball games, but I'm not sure he's one of them. I mean, the guy makes plays. He makes enough plays to keep us in the ball game. The quarterback running, all of a sudden he's draws and zone reads. And what about that sprint down the sidelines in the A&M game, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I kind of look at him as a Connor Shaw light.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, he's not as good a runner. He's not as good a thrower. He's not as fast. But he does a lot of the things that Shaw did, maybe at about an 80% level.
Right.
And if we had more playmakers on offense at the wide receiver core, we could be pretty decent on offense. I mean, we got Cooper and pretty much nobody else. I mean, I do like this Hurst guy. I don't know.
Hayden Hurst. Yeah, he caught a couple of more. Caught a couple more passes on Saturday.
Yeah, I got a feeling about him. I think we're going to be talking about him in a couple of years. But yeah, Orth, I'm really proud of him, and I think he's done a great job for us. But you know, it's just not enough.
And T-Bone, he's touched the ball one time in his career, and he scored a touchdown. But are you like me in wanting to see more Jonathan Walton in the backfield?
No, I thought that was Mike Davis. Like, I thought it was Mike Davis long after he had scored. I was yelling, go Mike, go Mike, go Mike. And then I'm like, wait a minute. And I start doing math in my head. I start reviewing the draft in my head. I'm like, I'm pretty sure Mike Davis isn't on the team anymore.
But after all your research, we're midway through the fourth quarter and you've missed a lot of the football game.
Exactly.
Trying to figure out
like,
who number 28 was.
It's Rod Talley. We just burned the red shirt on Rod Talley or something like that. So I had no clue, but whatever. 28 looked good going into the end zone.
Yeah, they said he was a good.
He even ran Mike Davis, you know?
Yeah, they said he was a good running back in college.
Yeah,
I mean in high school. Excuse me. So maybe he could be a good running back in college if we give him a chance. So, we get a chance down at the end of the game and Jarrell fumbles. And I mean, didn't it? That was so very 1990s. I mean, that was the John Hughes version of the Gamecocks right there, is to get in position. G-Man's looking funny. John Hughes was a...
I know who John Hughes was. Breakfast Club,
Pretty in Pink, 80s, 90s movies. Yeah, so this was a 90s version of the Gamecocks that showed up like a less talented team that somehow hangs around and gives you hope and then completely blows it at the end is exactly well, what
you know, happened. You know, too, it's so frustrating because don't we always seem to lose to Tennessee by 3 points? I mean,
yeah.
Every time.
Right.
I mean, every time. I mean, it's just like we're destined to lose to them by some, you know, very small margin on some weird fluky play.
Yeah, there's a Twitter question from Rickson Lane about heartbreaking losses coming up later, and there's a lot of losses to Tennessee that are heartbreakers. Our first ever overtime loss was to Tennessee. I think we've played like 3 overtime games against Tennessee, and we've played like what 4 or 5 total.
Four total.
Right.
Yeah. And let me just ask you. So we lose by 3. And this is not going to be popular. This is not going to be popular at all. We lost by 3, and Elliott Fry missed, what, a 45-yard field goal earlier in the game?
Something like that. It was a long one. Yep.
So he's hitting 69% of his kicks this year. I don't have nearly the confidence in Elliott Fry that a lot of our fan base has. Am I off base on that? He just makes me nervous.
No, I think he's not off base at all.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, he's a very good college kicker. I think what you see is a lot of people parroting Spurrier's opinion of him, which Spurrier, I think, was constantly giving one of those kind of backhanded compliments. We got a great kicker. You know, we got a real good
right,
kicker.
Right, yeah.
We can't score touchdowns.
If things fail in the red zone, you know, we got Elliott.
He's very good.
Yeah.
I would be interested, though, to know how many of his misses are from 45 yards or further, because I think he's missed a lot of long ones. You ought to do a little quick statistical.
It's not as many as you think. I actually did look it up yesterday, and I don't have it pulled up right now, but maybe when one of you jokers is talking, I can find it.
During this interlude, I will explain to you that I've done further research on the Helsinki and Stockholm syndrome, and it turns out the Stockholm syndrome is when you identify with your captors. The Helsinki syndrome is when you forget about geography and history, and just know that it's Scandinavian and syndrome.
So that's what happened to you earlier in the show.
Exactly. But I just wanted our listeners to know I continue to research. I'll be working on a paper about this issue.
It's not nearly as bad as that the word you mispronounced in the podcast earlier this season, though. That drew a lot of attention. So Fry. Fry's freshman year, he was 15 out of 18, 83%, 54 out of 55 on extra points. 2014, he was 18 out of 25, 72%. This year, he's 16 out of 23, 69.6%. He is 2 out of 4 from 50 yards plus, which is better than I thought he would be, actually. And he is 1, 2, 3 of 8. Is that right? 1, 2, 3 of 8 from 40 to 49 yards out. That's not good.
Like I said, that feels right.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, that's where he's missing right there.
7, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 3 out of 7. So yeah, people are just, when Fry makes a field goal, it's like, oh, there's steady old Elliott Fry, there he goes. But then I just feel like he's missing 1 out of every 3 this year. It's not great. But again,
well, if you lose by 3 and you missed a field goal, you need to think about that.
But nobody's talking about it. Nobody. It's all Jarrell's fumble, and it's not the missed field goal. So
anyway. Well, there's a lot of reasons why we lost that ball game. Jarrell's fumble being certainly one of them.
No, it was one play. It was Elliott Fry's field goal. That is the single play that lost us that football game.
Okay.
The other thing we need to talk about is our play calling. I mean, when we go for it on fourth and down when we shouldn't, and we don't go when we should, and then when we do go for it on fourth down, we run a doggone dive play up the middle for -2.
We ran a 4th and 4 as if it was 4th and 6 inches. And wasn't it funny at the end of that play? It was like the Tennessee and the South Carolina players like looked at their bench like, wait, was that it? Was that, you know, normally on a fourth down play, people are like jumping around and, you know, pointing and stuff. Like, everybody was just kind of like, Okay. All right. Good to see you guys. We'll be back out in a few minutes. I can't believe you. Everybody was stunned that we ran that play on 4th and 4. So anyway, another loss. I don't even know what our record is. What's our record? 3-5. Is that right? 3-5.
Like 3-5.
3-6. 3-6.
No, it's 3-5. It'll be 3-6 after this week.
Do you think we're going to lose to Florida? See, I think we're going to beat Florida.
Yeah. Nah, it'll be ugly.
I shouldn't say I think we're going to beat them. I think we'll give them a good run for their money. I think we'll lose by 3 points again.
Right.
So
they're missing like half their defense, but that probably won't matter.
So, you know, I'm going to go to Feathered Warrior Twitter question to kind of lead us into the next conversation. He tweeted, if we lose to Florida, beat the Citadel, and beat undefeated Clemson, what happens to Sean Elliott?
We give him a big bonus check, and we thank him for his service, and we see if he wants to be our assistant head coach and offensive line coach in the next go-round. Otherwise, we wish him well. I mean, I would love for that. I'll make that deal right now. I would make that deal every year. We can go 3-4-7 and beat Clemson at the end of every year. Sign me up.
I mean, I'm not sure he would do a bad job. I mean, I really like the way we played these last 2 weeks. However, we need an influx of excitement that comes with a new coach for recruiting purposes. I mean, I think it's just not going to generate the buzz that we need if he keeps the job. If he beats Clemson, that's great. But that's not going to generate the excitement we need in the high school ranks and around the region. We need somebody coming in who's a flashier, sexier, new name, new offense, all that stuff. Because we got to get some players in here. We're way down.
How do we think Tanner is looking at that? Do you think Tanner really thinks Elliott has a shot?
I don't know. I don't think Tanner thinks so. But I think what is happening, and I heard it for the first time this week from, I think it was Mason Zandi, or maybe it was Matulis, who said, we're playing for this guy. We want him to be our coach. You know, we're pulling for him to get the job, which you kind of knew would happen is the players are going to start coming out saying that we want this to be our guy. I can see that happening more and more.
Next they'll go on strike.
Oh jeez.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, that doesn't bother me. They should be saying that. I mean, they should be playing hard for him. I mean, they are in the midst of their season. He's their leader, and you know they should be saying that. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing for the program, but that doesn't bother me in the least.
So let me throw this out there. I mean, this could be had the ball bounced right. A much tougher decision for Ray Tanner than it is today. I mean, hypothetically, you know, he beats Vanderbilt. Sean Elliott goes out and beats Vanderbilt. Let's say Orff doesn't throw that pick six against Texas A&M. You got a tie ball game late. We got the ball. We go down, kick a field goal, beat Texas A&M at their place. Let's say instead of fumbling on Saturday, Jarrell Adams, you know, just breaks two or three more tackles, dives into the end zone, we beat Tennessee. Not to sound like the old Tommy Bowden or Dabo, we're not that far from being 3-0. How much pressure would be on Ray Tanner at that point, and how much would the fan base and the players be rallying around Sean Elliott if we were 3-0 at this point instead of 1-2?
It'd be a lot, but that's how the ball bounces. You know, in football, it's a game of small margins, and you know, a lot of good teams win a lot of games by just a couple of points, and we're not winning them. So that's got to tell you something.
Yeah. So, Feather, to answer your question, even if we beat Florida, Citadel, and Clemson, I don't know that Sean Elliott gets this job. Again, it'd be he would certainly put himself much deeper into the conversation, but I don't see it happening right now. So aside from that, not much different as far as the coaching search goes. It appears, at least if you listen to what they're saying on the state and the insider forums is that Tom Herman is the number one guy, is the guy that Tanner is really focused on. Kirby Smart is probably second, and Justin Fuente of Memphis has slipped down to third. I saw something today that said Fuente is the number one name at Virginia Tech, possibly, that they're looking hard at him, along with Chad Morris and Rich Rodriguez. So, have you guys heard anything different than that? I mean, I just don't even think we're going to know anything until after the SEC championship game.
Well, and that's the thing. I think Memphis losing this past weekend, just to compound everything else horrible that happened this past weekend in college football, Memphis losing probably made it less likely that we have Herman quickly. And the reason being, Memphis was in line. Memphis was ranked 13th. They would have gotten the group of five bid right into one of the big bowls. But with them losing and Houston remaining undefeated, you may see Houston get in there. And if Houston gets in there, if Houston's going to the Orange or the Sugar or something like that, Herman might be hard pressed to leave early. Right. I think is the theory. So in an odd sort of twist, we kind of need Houston to lose so we can get that cat here quickly.
Get him sooner rather than later. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's move on to Twitter questions because I'm losing my voice from my illness that's been going on for a couple of weeks. Let's start with Kevin in Chicago, who is at WepDiggy, WepDiggy on Twitter. He says, if Chelsea FC were to sack Jose Mourinho, any chance Coach Tom Herman takes that job over coming to Colombia? So let me tell you something. We're a Man City podcast. We are Manchester City all the way. So we don't want to talk about Chelsea, okay? Chelsea's a bunch of bums. No, actually,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm totally making that up because I don't. We don't really follow soccer, but G-Man's got his hand raised.
I just got to throw this out there though, because I mean, I'm on the Herman bandwagon too. Early on, I was big on the Smart bandwagon, and I still would like to see that if it comes to pass. Tell me why, other than the fact that he's 8-0 at Houston. Why are we so, and I'm including myself in this, why are we so enamored with Herman? Give me, look at this objectively and think about why are we suddenly anointing him the guy? Just curious. In your opinion.
Well, I mean, I can give you just a few short things, but it's nothing you don't already know. He's, you know, got a national championship ring where he was the offensive coordinator at the highest level. He's got Urban Meyer and Nick Saban in his coaching tree. Or he's in their trees, I guess. He's taken a Houston program that, you know, is in the middle of a good area to recruit, but has been really struggling in the last few years, and he's just been gangbusters in 1 year with them. So I think, you know, he's young. He's a tireless recruiter. Everyone says that he's an incredibly organized, structured kind of coach, which kind of sounds like what we need right now.
Yeah, what T-Bone said.
But don't those guys come along? Don't one or two of these guys come along every year? I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Don't one or two of these guys come along every year?
Well, we got to hire one. We got to hire one of them.
I know. I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, you know, should we be going after this guy who's recruiting and coaching in Houston, who used to recruit and coach in Ohio, who's from California?
Well, or should we see if we end up? Yeah, no, if we end up hiring him, I get what you're saying. It's a good way to look at it. It's like, what made this guy so special? Where he's, you know, we're excluding all other possibilities. But two things there. One is if we end up hiring this guy, I'm willing to bet you that we end up with two or three guys with local ties, one on the offensive side, couple on the defensive side, probably. People that have coached here before or leaving, you know, another school, maybe leaving Georgia, leaving North Carolina, somebody with some ties around here to kind of give him those local connections. And the second thing there is, you know, ask yourself, what other direction do you think we need to go? I mean, do we need to go with the old guy again, the established name? Do we need to get some, you know, assistant coach out of the NFL? I guess if you're going to, you know, play devil's advocate, I would say, would turn that around. What other direction do you think we should be going other than kind of the young, energetic guy?
You know, my only retort to that would be somebody who is deeply entrenched in the Southeastern Conference, and who has been coaching in the conference for a long time, knows where all the bodies are buried, knows all the high schools, knows all of that like the back of his hand. That would be
we're gonna regret not hiring Kirby Smart if this doesn't work out.
I'm just asking. Just saying.
I hear you. I mean, Kirby Smart could very well be the next Nick Saban, but you know, he could very well be the next Will Muschamp. Who knows?
Exactly.
There's no foolproof plan here. So,
right.
Next question, gentlemen. This is from Garnet and Black Op on Twitter. Regarding our next head coach, talk has been all about the best candidates. Who would be the worst? and I guess he's saying like the worst of the reasonable candidates.
The real candidates.
You know, I don't think we're gonna
Ellis Johnson.
We're not gonna think of Rich Kotite or, you know, somebody like that.
Keep trying to make us want to hire Rich or Rick Bisaccia.
Right. Yeah.
I don't really understand why.
I think he wants us to hire him. I think he's the only one really touting himself for the job.
He's the one floating it out there. He and our friend Marty Simpson are out there touting Rich Bisaccia. Look, to hear all of the folks who have stood up for him and said what a great guy, that's great. I mean, he's a fantastic NFL assistant. He is just not what South Carolina needs right now. And the fan base would show up at Ray Tanner's front door with pitchforks and torches if it was Rich Bisaccia. I guess, you know, Mac Brown would be another one that has been mentioned that we kind of laughed at. Barry Switzer. Barry Switzer wants to get back into coaching. No, I'm just kidding. Not Barry Switzer.
I mean, I'd say one of the, and I don't know why, but some people are so enamored with Charlie Strong, and they think somehow he's going to be available and him coming here would be like the greatest thing ever. I'm not in that camp. Don't sign me up.
Yeah, I love Charlie Strong, but again, the timing of all this and, you know, the smell is a little off his rose out there in Texas, if I can mix metaphors.
Is there a worse possible hire than Lane Kiffin?
I don't know. I don't want Lane Kiffin here, but I somehow get the feeling he's going to succeed wherever he goes next. I don't think that would be a terrible hire, to be honest with you. I think it would be bad from a PR standpoint, but I think he's proving to be a pretty good coach.
Ed Ogeron.
He had his chance. Great recruiter, terrible head coach.
I don't think we could stand and listen to him at a press conference. Just once. I mean,
he'd be taking his shirt off.
Right.
Feathered Warrior comes back with another question. What do you take, football speaking, from the Missouri situation this week?
That if they were 9-0, never mind. Not going to say it.
Tread lightly. You know, yeah. First of all, Gary Pinkel. If anybody's giving Gary Pinkel credit for the way he handled this, he handled it in the only possible way he could handle it. I mean, think about it. You either stand behind your players or you don't. And if he doesn't, not only does he lose this team, he loses recruits. And, I mean, it is downhill from there for Gary Pinkel. So saying, you know, yes, I'm against racism. Yes, I stand with my players. Okay, you know, thanks, Gary, for doing that. But As far as long-term effects on the Missouri football program, I've got to think this is going to hurt recruiting, don't you?
I don't know.
It's drama. Drama's never good, you know. Yeah. And there's already been some rumblings that Pinkel might be on the way out. So, you know, it's got to be a net negative. But I don't know. I really think that a lot of us other schools in the Southeast, we haven't really been following that situation. I know I haven't been. So I don't really get the nuances of what was happening out there. I don't really know how to explain what happened. But I think in general, pick up the paper. Sounds bad. Maybe my son needs to go play at Arkansas.
For Belima, who wants to get on his wife?
Yeah, that is it. Just me, or does Arkansas play overtime games every week?
And it's not just a regular overtime game; it's always wacky, yeah. You know,
right? Epic
lateral on 4th and 25, or you know, they played like they played the longest. They played like a 7 overtime game against LSU a few years ago. They just played overtime against Auburn a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy all the time.
Connor Tapp, meet me at Taps, says, what happens first, a 500 record versus the SEC in football or an NCAA tourney berth in basketball?
I'm going to say the latter.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with that too, because I think we'll be there within 2 years.
Big day tomorrow, by the way.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I want to get your thoughts on that at the end.
All right.
Let's see. Who else have we got? Patty Daniels says, podcast question, how do we defend ourselves against or cope with Clemson's current success? Is there a support group? T-Bone, you live amongst them. It's like being in the middle of the walkers from The Walking Dead.
That's so funny because that's exactly the analogy I was about to use.
Really?
I'm like, you know, I don't even have an Alexandria safe zone, you know. I'm like Morgan out there with just a stick to defend me, you know. Away with you. I want to paint away with you on every one of the walls. It's horrible up here right now. Everyone's wearing orange every day. It's all anyone talks about. You're not allowed to talk about anything else. I went to church the other Sunday. I walked in the door. Everyone was talking about, you know, how good of a Christian man Dabo was and how it proves that, you know, good can triumph over evil. It's beating me down. I heard one time a chiropractor, and I don't know whether chiropractic or chiropracty. I don't know if that's a real thing or if it's like ear candling. I don't know.
Chiropractors are real things.
I don't know if that's a thing or not. You know, I'm assuming that it's like a pyramid scheme or something. I don't know. But anyway, the point being, I heard one talk about how your ears are supposed to be over your shoulders.
Right.
If you can tell someone's mental state by how far forward their head is. And my chin is on my little Birdman chest right now.
You can't pick your head up.
For the first time ever, I understand what I can't even means. You know, I can't even. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't see them having a loss. I don't see them ever losing again forever.
You know what's sad about it?
In all of history.
I looked at their I looked at their depth chart the other day in the paper, just out of curiosity, before the Florida State game. They have two seniors in their starting lineup.
They got a lot of guys who are gonna jump though. They got
don't jump with Dabo. No, he goes and tells them, I've prayed about it, and I'm convinced God wants you to stay. That's what he did with Spiller, and that's what he does. And they're still young kids, and they're susceptible to that stuff.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing that he did. It's an amazing job because he willed it to be so.
Yeah.
He had no coaching talent whatsoever other than this frantic belief in his own ability. You know,
let's change the subject. And it's getting bad. Change the subject.
T-Bone's rubbing his face.
We may lose T-Bone any minute.
Living in Atlanta ain't so bad right now, let me tell you. John Michael Gunnels says, y'all are cool with Ellis Johnson coming back and back up the road in whatever capacity, right?
Linebacker coach.
Yeah, he would be a bad guy to have on the staff.
Good with that.
Kit Beatty has one more Clemson question. How many slogans does the Clemson football team have? Too deep, all in. I know there are others. Yeah,
bring your own guts. Bring your own domination. Have y'all seen the cover of Sports Illustrated this week?
I know Deshaun Watson's on it. I glanced at it. I don't really want to spend a lot of time caring about
let me
football.
Just say my ears are way forward of my shoulders right now.
So let's have some fun. Rickson Lane says, rank the four most heartbreaking Gamecock football losses, college football playoff style. One of you has to be Danny Cannell and make no sense. And I wish here's the funny thing about this football season. I couldn't tell you what Danny Cannell's about because I don't watch any of the pregame. I don't watch any of the postgame. It's like I watch the games, and I don't watch any of the talking heads. And I see people talking about Cannell every once in a while and kind of what an idiot he is and all this. But I couldn't do an imitation of him or anything like that. I don't know what his quirks
are. Are they not talking about those commercials?
What commercials?
There's like some commercials where they're all competing about who gets to watch the playoffs with somebody else. I don't know.
No.
And since somebody has a cheese plate or something.
No, I think he's just generally talking about Danny Cannell being an idiot. But
well, I don't watch much of it, but I will concur that he is an idiot. No doubt about it. First class. So we're gonna rank the four worst losses in Gamecock history in order.
I'm gonna put one out there.
Okay? I got two. Go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. That's cool.
I mean, I know what number one is. I know what number one is. Everything after number one is debatable.
It's got to be Navy.
Yes.
The push off.
That was going to be my second.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the push off would be number two. See, we're going in reverse order. I think Rickson wanted us to go 4-3-2-1, but we don't spend much time preparing for this, as you can tell. So, so Navy number one, 1984, Clemson, the Rod Gardner push off. It was kind of a push up too. It was the way he extended his arm.
Yeah.
What year was that? 2000. So a couple of others I jotted down. Citadel, that was 1990, I think. I don't know that I've ever been more miserable leaving a football game than I was after that Citadel game. I was more miserable after that than I was after 63-17 or after 59-0 against Florida State in 1988. I jotted down Georgia Tech 1988 when we lost.
I was there.
Yeah, we lost that game 34-0.
Yeah.
And we were ranked sixth in the country in Georgia Tech. I think they had one win that season, and it was over a Division II team.
One win of the last 2 years. They were like one out of their last 20 or something.
And heartbreaking losses that were moderately heartbreaking when they happened, but were more heartbreaking later when we realized what they really cost us would be Auburn 2011 and Tennessee 2013.
Yep.
So there you go. There's five. There's a top five. You got any?
The Florida game where they had the suspended player
blocking kicks. Ball. The suspended guy blocking kicks all over the place.
Yeah, that might be one. That might be one of my worst individual performances as a fan. That game.
Yeah, you went for a long walk after that. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question to throw out to Twitter, Rickson, to get some other thoughts. But those are.
A good question. Good question.
Yeah, very good question. Heartbreaking losses. All right, so we have Florida noon on Saturday. Going to be Sean Elliott's big win. They're going to carry him off on their shoulders, and that's going to be his moment of a lifetime before he goes to be head coach at Norfolk State or offensive line coach at Maryland, something like that. Any final thoughts?
Please let it be over soon. Please let it be over.
I know Clemson's not going to lose until at least the ACC championship game. At
Alabama's going to take them down.
Billy Kohler wrote a good piece this morning saying that you know they're going to be like some of the other famous undefeated teams that are basically paper tigers, fool's gold. They say he believes they're going to get drilled in the playoffs, whoever they play. So, Billy, I hope you're right.
Of Billy Kohler, but
well, you're hearing them every day is your problem. You're hearing how good they are every day. You have to live with it. And I'm telling you, man,
Helsinki syndrome.
Helsinki. So, are we wrapping up, or you got more?
No, we're wrapping up. Seventh Woods.
You wanted to bring up the Seventh Woods thing.
What do you think about Seventh Woods committing tomorrow?
I think we got a really good shot, but the guy is very, very quiet. He's not revealed anything to anybody. So, but you know, the tea leaves are kind of trending in our direction, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
But I did not make it to the exhibition game, regrettably, because I should have gone. But they say that this Cobb kid, the tractor trailer.
He's like 6'9", 290 or something
that. They said he was the real deal. So I'm encouraged. I'm ready to get out to some round ball. I think it's going to be a much more enjoyable season. But Seventh Woods, everybody cross your fingers, because that could be a game changer.
Yeah, big time. Big time. All right, gentlemen, enjoyed it as always. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will get back to you next week after the Florida victory. So have a good week, and go Cox. Tell me good.